KPBS On Demand is supported by Marakal Design and Remodeling, helping homeowners with their home remodeling needs. From ADUs to custom kitchen remodels and room additions, Marakal Design and Remodeling designs and builds your dream home. Learn more at trustyourhometous.com.
Good morning, I'm Debbie Cruz. It's Wednesday, May 22nd. The latest on San Diego's new commission on police practices. More on that next, but first, let's do the headlines. More psychiatric care services for people who are low income are coming to the county. The County Board of Supervisors yesterday approved a proposed agreement with UCSD Health. The agreement would provide acute psychiatric care and up to 45 additional beds for eligible Medi-Cal patients at the university's East Campus Medical Center. According to a recent study, 1 in 13 county residents living in low-income households are living with a serious mental illness. The partnership is expected to strengthen the behavioral health workforce and decrease the gap in available psychiatric beds. The board's interim chief administrative officer will negotiate with UCSD health officials and update the board before a formal agreement is approved. The County Board of Supervisors also voted yesterday to accept nearly $20 million from FEMA for a migrant transition day center. The center will help immigrants entering the U.S. travel to their final destinations. Supervisors also approved a provision that requires nonprofit contractors to accept all migrants to ensure they don't end up on the streets. Since mid-September, more than 136,000 migrants have been released from CBP custody in the county. San Diegans will have a chance to learn more about the county's more than $8.4 billion recommended budget at two upcoming community sessions. At the meetings, you can find out how the budget process works, ask questions, and give feedback. County staff will talk about funding priorities, including behavioral health, homelessness, housing, and public safety. The first session will be in person tomorrow at the County Operations Center in Kearny Mesa. You can stop by any time between 5:30 and 7:30 p.m. The second session will be held over Zoom at 6 p.m. next Wednesday. For more information, including the Zoom link, visit the Engage San Diego County website. From KPBS, you're listening to San Diego News Now. Stay with me for more of the local news you need.
KPBS On Demand is supported by San Diego Symphony, presenting showbiz icon Mark Shaiman for a night of songs and stories with the San Diego Symphony Orchestra, featuring music from Sleepless in Seattle, Hairspray, Beaches, Sister Act, Smash, and more. July 3rd at the Rady Shell at Jacobs Park. Tickets at theshell.org.
It's been 1 year since San Diego's City Council appointed members to the new Commission on Police Practices. Investigative reporter Scott Rodd found the Civilian Oversight Group is still trying to get its footing.
In 2020, San Diego voters overwhelmingly approved Measure B. It required the creation of a commission with the power to independently investigate complaints against officers and subpoena witnesses. But it took until last May for the city council to appoint commissioners.
There have been some challenges, certainly.
Gloria Tran is chair of the commission.
That's to be expected when you're building a commission. Relatively from scratch.
Most staff positions remain unfilled, and the commission is still working on draft procedures for launching independent investigations.
Obviously, I wish we were even further, but it's a city thing, so some of the bureaucracy has held us up.
Turnover has also been a struggle. The 25-member commission has had to fill more than 10 vacancies this year. But Tran says the commission is keeping up with reviewing the police department's internal investigations into its officers, which was a struggle for the city's previous civilian oversight board. Scott Rodd, KPBS News.
One of the City of San Diego's safe parking lots offers families a safe space to stay while finding permanent housing. Education reporter MG Perez tells us that's not all they offer.
18-year-old Zora Murray is just 2 weeks away from her high school graduation. She and her family have spent the past few months living in a camper at the city's Rose Canyon Safe Parking Lot off I-5 near Claremont. It's the support she needed to concentrate on her studies and her plan to attend community college.
Needing help is not necessarily people feeling bad for you. It's just People really want to help you. People genuinely really want to help you, so take the help.
Volunteers with Jewish Family Service who are on site help Zora apply for financial aid so she can attend Miramar College starting this summer. Rose Canyon is one of six safe parking lots run by the San Diego Jewish Family Service, four of them funded by the City of San Diego. MG Perez, KPBS News.
In January, there were about 10,600 people experiencing homelessness throughout San Diego County. That's according to the annual point-in-time count results released today. KPBS health reporter Heidi DeMarco has more about what the numbers show.
In January, volunteers set out at 4 a.m. to canvass the county and conduct the annual point-in-time count, which assesses the number of individuals experiencing homelessness. The data show a 3% rise in homelessness overall in the county compared to last year, but a 44% increase in people living in their cars. Jordan Bean, chief of staff for the Regional Task Force on Homelessness, says the increase in individuals and families living in their cars is contributing to the rise.
We've had 25 months straight with more people experiencing homelessness for the first time than exiting homelessness. And so these numbers aren't a surprise to us. But the opportunities are there to continue to make a real impact and decrease the amount of suffering we're seeing here in San Diego County.
Bean says the recent camping ban may have moved people to the outskirts of the city of San Diego. The city shows a 6% increase in people living unsheltered from 2023. Heidi DeMarco, KPBS News.
Tourism in San Diego is still recovering from the pandemic. Reporter Katie Anasta says industry leaders are welcoming the start of the summer season.
3, 2, 1.
The San Diego Tourism Authority kicked off the summer season with streamers, roller skaters, and local mascots at the Natural History Museum in Balboa Park. Chief Operating Officer Carrie Kapich says tourism supports 1 in 8 jobs in San Diego.
When our tourism industry thrives, the entire San Diego region thrives.
It also funds public services. The city says more than $170 million in hotel occupancy taxes went into San Diego's general fund last year. More than 32 million people are expected to visit San Diego in 2024. That's slightly more than last year, but still a few million shy of 2019 levels. Katie Anastas, KPBS News.
2 years after it was bought by Japanese beer maker Sapporo, Stone Brewing showed off the first phase of its expansion project yesterday. North County reporter Alexander Nguyen was there.
Southern California's largest brewery is about to get bigger. Sapporo Stone has invested $60 million in expanding its facilities, $40 million in its Richmond, Virginia location, and $20 million here in Escondido. The expansion will double the brewery's capacity, meaning more beer can be brewed here. But for the city of Escondido, it means so much more than that. Dane White is the mayor of Escondido.
For us, it's jobs, employment opportunities, revenue for the city.
With the expansion, Sapporo Stone added 125 jobs locally. White says that's helping the city close its budget deficit.
Absolutely, it does help solve it. You know, number one, employment, and number two, sales tax. Sales tax is the largest revenue source for the city, so having this big of this part of the economy right here in Escondido certainly helps.
The expansion means that all Sapporo beers sold in the U.S. will be brewed in this country. Alexander Nguyen, KPBS News.
KPBS News is out with a new 6-part video podcast. The first episode premieres today. And joining me to talk about it is creator and host Beth Accomando, who is also an arts reporter here at KPBS. Beth, welcome to the San Diego News Now podcast.
Thank you.
So the video podcast is called Stripper Energy, Fighting Back from the Fringes. Give us the elevator pitch. What's it all about?
Well, I'm always attracted to stories from the fringes, and Cotta Pierce Morgan fought essentially a civil rights battle from the unlikely stage of a strip club. So some may bristle at the term stripper, but Cotta Pierce Morgan embraced it in the 70s because she felt empowered by what she calls stripper energy. So I'll let her provide an example of what that is.
When I was closing up Lee Girls, the parking lot was empty. I went out to my car, and there were still three guys there. And they won't let me leave. They have my car door. They're laughing. They think it's funny. And so I take my gun, and I pointed it at them, and I said, I've asked you really nicely. I have to get home. Oh, the look on their face. So that was a little bit of my stripper energy. I was not going to let anybody frighten me.
And I feel this story really kind of typifies Cotta and who she is. She's somebody who does not want to put up with things and who will draw on this reserve of what she calls stripper energy. And, you know, she constantly had examples for me. She goes, oh, did I tell you about the time I was with, like, the Hell's Angels and I punched one of them in the face? So I hope people are going to enjoy meeting her and feeding off of her energy.
How did you find out about Cotta's life story?
Well, I met her through her fringe shows, which have taken the history of Lee Girls and turned them into plays about social injustice. So every year that I was covering San Diego International Fringe, I would learn a little bit more about that history and about Cotta's story. And so what's important to me is that these women were in a marginalized community and that the stereotypes about women working in adult entertainment really stigmatized them and created circumstances in which vice cops felt that they could harass and abuse them without fear of repercussions because society just didn't seem to care about what was happening to these women.
Why is this relevant today?
Well, I think Cotta's story is important because these kind of things continue to happen in different ways and because she's proof that not being a silent bystander makes a difference. This is a major thing for her. Her plays are all about this, and she's basically lived her life saying, if you see something that's wrong or if something upsets you or you feel is not right, you need to speak out. And she refers to what she did and what some of the dancers spoke out about as being Geiger counters. And her point is that she was raising complaints about officers who would later end up being charged with other things and even crimes. And that perhaps if these women had been listened to earlier, these people might have been disciplined or removed from the force, and these other incidents might not have happened. So I think it's important because there are all sorts of marginalized communities that suffer from harassment or abuse or just selective enforcement, and it's important that we listen to their stories and give them a voice.
Can you tell me, Beth, what was it like creating this series? Can you take me and our listeners behind the scenes of it all?
Well, one of the amazing things is that Cotta has been keeping archives about Lee Girls and about her life for 50 years or maybe more. So she has more than like 150 boxes of photos and letters and police reports, video, audio, and it's kind of a daunting task to be going through all this stuff. And I swear we have probably only scratched the surface of a few boxes. And I feel like I'm only telling a portion of the story. But I think that all this archival material was so fascinating to me, including some statements from these women that were written back in the 70s and 80s. And you know, it was their opportunity to kind of speak about what they were going through. And Cotta never felt like those statements would ever see the light of day. And when she shared some of them with me, it was really moving to hear what these women were putting up with and how so many of them were dancing in order to put themselves through school or to support their kids or, you know, things like that, which may not fit the stereotype that people have.
Right. Was there anything that you were surprised to learn?
Well, I think both Kata and I had a surprise in the sense that when Kata was kind of opening up her boxes and doing some research, she learned that during the 70s and 80s, the police had a term that they used to refer to the dancers, which was NHI, or no humans involved. And she discovered the term in a recent story that she read about Donna Gentile, a murdered prostitute. And Kata discusses the term in the podcast.
No humans involved was how we were called, you know, by the cops. And I mean, they're talking about the fringe women, and that being a exotic dancer, we were lumped right in with the hookers and the drug addicts and the biker gang women.
I was shocked that they listed strippers. I didn't know that I was an NHI.
So that discovery really shocked her. And what surprised me, too, is that the stereotypes and the stigmatization about adult entertainment still exist today. And two of the women who were in the podcast did not want their identities revealed, not because they're embarrassed by what they did or what they do, but rather because they feel that too many people would judge them for working at Les Girls and would treat them differently. So it was even a challenge to include footage of the women doing their job as dancers because people are uncomfortable with women working in a sexualized industry and just seem to assume that these women are being exploited or that they're embarrassed by what they do. And I do want to point out that Les Girls is unique because for decades, it has been a female-run business with a woman owner, a woman manager, and no men are there as bouncers or DJs or bartenders, and there's no alcohol served there. So it is kind of a unique venue within the adult entertainment world.
Very unique. What do you hope listeners take away from the podcast?
Well, I will let Kata provide that answer in the sense that she always says everything she does is to encourage people to not be silent bystanders. So if you see something that's wrong or it makes you uncomfortable or angry, that's when you need to speak up. And that is what she likes to call stripper energy. And it's something that can start in fear, but then it moves to anger and to fighting back. And I also hope that people will watch this podcast and see these women as human beings and not as the stereotypes.
Leslie, where can people watch the series?
Well, the first episode drops today, and then the next one will be on June 5th with a total of 6 video podcasts. So I encourage people to watch them, and a great place to do that is on YouTube. But you can also find all the information about the podcast at kpbs.org/stripper energy.
I've been speaking with KPBS arts reporter Beth Accomando, the creator and host of the new KPBS video podcast, Stripper Energy, Fighting Back from the Fringes. Beth, it was so nice chatting with you. I'm looking forward to watching your new podcast.
Well, thank you very much.
That's it for the podcast today. As always, you can find more San Diego news online at kpbs.org. Join us again tomorrow for the day's top stories. I'm Debbie Cruz. Thanks for listening and have a great Wednesday.
KPBS On Demand is supported by San Diego Symphony, presenting showbiz icon Mark Shaiman for a night of songs and stories with the San Diego Symphony Orchestra, featuring music from Sleepless in Seattle, Hairspray, Beaches, Sister Act, Smash, and more. July 3rd at the Rady Shell at Jacobs Park. Tickets at theshell.org.